This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends. It's your guy, Michael Cruz Kane, and welcome to episode five of A Good Cry. Can you even believe it? We made it. First of all, I have to say thank you to all the people who came to my show this past weekend. Wow, I couldn't believe how many people showed up, giving it up especially to Ange, Max, Danny, Sarah, Jamal, but also everyone who wrote in, everyone who DM'd me, everyone who said, hey, when your show comes to my city, I'm going to come see it. I really appreciate you. I'm doing another one on November 7th at Union Hall with my friend Pat Regan. I hope you will come and check it out. And let's talk about some grief stuff. Today, I'm thinking about grief on social media. Can it help you? Can it help other people? Mostly social media is a contest to be the absolute worst person alive that all of us are simultaneously winning. Congratulations, we did it. We're terrible. But grief is the only thing, maybe, that I have found to be unifying and that people are nice about on social media. I tweeted about my son in 2019, and there are all these responses that poured in, and suddenly you could see in the comments of this tweet that there are thousands and thousands of people ready to share their grief and who've kept it bottled up for so long. And it really blew my mind. And a lot of these were people who used pseudonyms on Twitter. You know, they're not using their real name. It's not Gus Smith or whatever. It's Lil Gus 6777. And I think that affords people some confidence about grief. They feel more open emotionally than they would if they were using their real names. So I got lots of responses from, you know, like Maddie Bot or Marvin Gardens or Potato Pussy is another real one. And they were lovely. The message I got from Potato Pussy was so nice. And as these thousands of responses came in, it started to feel like, oh, I'm actually not alone. My wife and I are not alone in this. There are so many people who know what it's like. And that meant a lot to me. 1% of the time, social media can be a really amazing place. And I think that time is when we talk about grief. Now, speaking of social media, my guest today is Lori Kilmartin. She is a writer for Conan. She wrote a great book, a couple of great books, but one of them is called Dead People Suck. That is funnier than any book about death has a right to be. And also, she tweeted about her dad dying and her mother dying from COVID and was very open about those deaths on social media. And it was something I had never seen before, because Lori is not only a griever, but she's also just unbeatably fun, an incredibly funny person. So you read those tweets and you empathize with what she's going through, but you also laugh about it. And that's very rare for someone to have the ability to take true tragedy, make you empathize with them, and also make you laugh. You almost feel weird about laughing at it because it's not something you're used to laughing at. But those of us who have been through grief know that the absurdity that surrounds it is funny. And one of the things that we talk about that really stuck with me is recording your family and your loved ones so that when they're gone, you have something that you can remember them by. And not just a photograph, but even conversations. It's something that makes a lot of sense if you see death coming. And you should see it coming because it is coming. For every single one of us. You know what I mean? Look to your right, look to your left. All of you are going to be dead. Get about the business of recording them now. And when I say they're going to be dead, I don't mean that to be sad. That's just part of how it is. That's part of life. And it's most of existence. Anyway, I really love this conversation with Lori. I hope you love it too. This is episode 5 of A Good Cry. I hope it helps. Hi, Lori. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a podcast about grief. I have been following you on Twitter for 100 years. Big fan, huge admirer.
Oh, thank you.
But one of the things that made me very interested in talking to you is recently your mom died from COVID, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you tweeted about it, which is something like live tweeting it pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Which is something that I hadn't seen happen before, that I'm not aware of having happened before. And I was just fascinated by that. As someone who has lost someone in my life, it was a kind of relatable that I'd never seen before, like someone talking about the things you feel, and also someone who's funny. So it's not just a litany of really brutal observations, but also there's humor injected into it.
Right.
Can you talk about that time?
Yeah, it was in the end of May. She went into, my mom lived with me, she had fallen and her hip popped out of its socket, like she had an artificial hip. So she went to the hospital to get that dealt with. And then afterwards, they wanted to put her in a SNF, a skilled nursing facility, to get give her rehab because she needed to build back some muscle from laying down for so long, you know, for like 3 or 4 days straight of laying down and, you know, not walking. You know, when you're like 83, I guess you lose all of your muscle in a day and a half, right? So So they sent her to this place, just a real, I mean, everything was like either full or closed because of COVID. It was a really horrible time to go into a nursing facility in, you know, end of May of 2020 in California. And so we found something, you know, the doctor found something that wasn't too far away. There were like 2 options and one was like an hour and a half in like a garbage city. And so I picked this one and, you know, I couldn't go in and check on her. I'd been able to before other times she's fallen and had to do rehab and stuff. I was always able to visit and check it out and, you know, just go, hey, can you plug this in for my mom or can you do things? Because they just forget about these old people and these things and you have to like be on top of it. So
yeah.
Have somebody go, hey, my mom needs a blanket and stuff. So I wasn't allowed in there. So, you know, our conversations were really short. Sometimes no one would pick up the phone. Sometimes her iPhone wasn't working because it hadn't been plugged in because no one would plug it in. So it was really hard to communicate with her. And then I got a call saying that she'd been taken to the hospital because she tested positive for COVID. And I like got in the car and I felt like I was like right behind the ambulance, you know, like
yeah.
I got to the hospital in Pasadena at Huntington Hospital and obviously I wasn't allowed to go in or anything. So I brought her stuff. And then that was like around 5 PM on Thursday, the 11th of June. And then, either that night or early in the morning, but I think it was that night where they just said the hospital called me and said her lungs are glass. Which was, you know, back then that was like one of those things we were hearing about COVID. And
what is that? What does that mean? Her lungs are glass, meaning they're like super fragile or
they're just basically, they're hard and they were opaque, like that glassy. And they kept like before that you'd see like when people were trying to explain what COVID was, they go, when this happens to your lungs, it's like, it's over. Right. So, and, you know, she was very frail. So it took her really quickly. So the doctor said, basically, you know, we can put her on a vent if you want, but the odds of her recovering are really, really low. And my mom didn't want any sort of intervention. And they said, we can just make her comfortable. We'll just give her morphine until she passes. And so...
No, I'm sorry. Did she not want intervention because she... Like it was too much bother? Why didn't she want...
She was a frail person. And yeah, I think she didn't want to be a burden. And I think after my dad died, she was, aside from, you know, seeing her grandchildren, which was like my son and my sister's two girls, I think she was she had her binoculars out and she was looking for my dad, you know, and clearly wanted to join him on whatever journey he was on. She had signed a DNR a long time ago, like, you know, maybe even before my dad died.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, we opted for that, and we had a week of morphine with my mom, and it happened during, so she got COVID right after Memorial Day, right during that time where Newsom opened California up again very quickly for a couple weeks. And somebody brought COVID back to the nursing facility, right? So at that time, for just a little brief time in 2020, California was not, or SoCal wasn't flooded with COVID patients. So when my mom was at Huntington, you know, she had her own room, you know, and the nurses had, you know, they would answer our phone calls. They weren't overwhelmed. And so they hooked up, they had an iPad already hooked up for FaceTime. You know, at first I was just calling in and talking to my mom, even though she wasn't responding. And then I'd hang up. And then as the week progressed, we just ended up leaving the iPad on for like days straight.
Oh, wow.
And so it would, you know, my sister was at the house. My sister came down and, you know, we would just have my mom on, right? And we talked to her, you know, I put her next to my bed before I went to sleep. I didn't say goodnight. And I hope you're there in the morning, that, you know, if you're not, I love you. We love you. We're here. And, you know, all that kind of stuff. Just hoping that, you know, since they say hearing is the last thing to go, hoping that she could hear us over the iPad speakers. I mean, we had no control. We're like, are they turned up? We had no control over that stuff, but we just hoped.
Right.
And there was a point, on Friday morning, they were basically, we all decided comfort care. And then sometime over the weekend, you know, my sister and I wanted to visit her. And we had heard that other hospitals were allowing family members in if they knew this COVID patient was going to die, if you were covered in PPP is the lung.
PPP.
Covered in cash from the government. But Huntington wasn't allowing that. That wasn't part of their protocols yet. And so my sister is a psychiatrist. So she belongs to a group on Facebook of female physicians. And so she lobbied and got everyone to sign a petition, like doctors from all over the country. And then I have a pretty big Twitter account. And then I put up a phone number and said, please call these people. We just want to visit our mom, you know, and I never asked for stuff like that, but, you know, I was like,
sure, sure.
You know, and so the combination of those two things caused or I don't know, maybe the hospital wouldn't put it like this, but on Monday morning, they changed their policy.
Oh, wow.
And my sister and I were going to be the first two to be part of the new policy where you can visit for an hour. So we, and again, we didn't know when she was going to die. It was like, we just want to get there before she dies and talk to her. So we drove, it was like a 15-minute drive and, you know, we were completely covered. We were in plastic gowns and, you know, obviously a couple of face masks, plastic gloves, you know, the face shield, everything. And then we went in and sat and talked to our mom, and our mom, she hadn't moved for days. And at some point she lifted herself off the bed, like her chest and her head, and she rolled her eyes up. Like, so she'd opened her eyes and we felt like she knew we were there because she'd responded physically to us. And
you said she hadn't moved, right? So that's huge.
Yeah, that is huge. So I we're like, okay, I think she's going to hear us. And I don't know if she was like, you know, I wonder if she, because she would have been so worried that we would get COVID from her if she knew she had COVID.
Right.
That I think she, you know, might have been saying, get out. What are you doing here? You know, but we were there and, you know, we played music. We played a lot of, you know, country music that she liked. And we played a lot of the songs we played for my dad. The three of us played for my dad.
That's really sweet.
A lot of Linda Ronstadt and stuff. Yeah.
Sure.
And we tried to do for her what we did for our dad on our dad's last night. My dad was had lung cancer and he did home hospice. So we were just with him for the last 9 days of his life. And so what turned out to be the last night of his life, we didn't know obviously ahead of time, is just like he had a lot of goo in his lungs. And so I was patting his back and my sister was scooping it out of his mouth because the machine that the hospice people had left us broke.
Oh.
So it was like, it was really, it was like crazy. But at the same time, we were all around him, you know, hugging him. I had my legs around him because I was at his back and, you know, doing this very lightly to kind of break up whatever was in his lungs. And he also liked when we did that, you know, before he had had cancer. So, and just telling him what, all the things he did for us and how grateful we were. And so we tried to do that with my mom too. I mean, we did do that, you know, and we just, you know, kind of flooded her with as much as we could. You know, it really, I was able to hold my mom's hand, but I had to have a plastic glove on. Like it's,
yeah.
You know, she wasn't looking at us anyway. So it's not like she wouldn't have, she wasn't able to see us. So she didn't see us so covered. I think that would have been jarring too, just to see us like, dressed like Silkwood patients, people that had just been, you know, yeah, exposed like, to nuclear waste or
feels
something.
Feels like science fiction.
Yeah. So, but she didn't see that really. And, but we couldn't do skin to skin. Although I think we now know we could have probably because yeah. It's airborne and heck, I could have just washed my hands super hard. But yeah. So that was our last time with her. And then we left. And then we again kept the iPad on for, you know, until she died, which would have been the following Thursday morning on the 18th. And, you know, she died, her, like my dad, she, you know, her breath started to become really far apart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, there's that where you're watching and you're like, oh my God, there was like 30 seconds between that one, 35 seconds.
Oh my God.
And then, oh, there's not another one's not coming and they're gone. So that the same thing happened with my dad too. I was there when my dad didn't take the next breath.
And is there a doctor there with, like, is there a doctor or someone in the room with her saying like, that's it? Or you're on the iPad watching it happen. And then what? Like,
we're on the iPad.
A machine beeps and somebody understands. How does the hospital know that she's died?
I don't know. Maybe they're notified, but they kind of left us with her for a while. Like no one came in to immediately, you know, push her out. And again, because I think there was a lull, they gave us a little extra time with her, you know, just to have her, just to watch her without them interfering and to cry and to realize, wow, this, okay, she died. And then maybe like an hour later, a doctor came in, you know, and we kind of like, yeah, everyone's like, yep, okay, she passed away. And then, you know, there's this moment where, you know, they have to turn off FaceTime. So like I'm looking at my mom and it's going to, and then, and then all my apps come back
yeah,
on my
sure.
iPad. And I'm like, what? What
the
is
notifications
happening?
From Twitter, like across the top of your.
Yeah. Everything just came back. And, you know, I will always associate that FaceTime boop with, you know, my mom disappearing.
Yeah. Oh, that's so wild.
That was so wild. It was weird.
Like a uniquely COVID experience.
Very much so. Yeah. Although, you know, everyone who lost somebody during the pandemic went through something similar, even if they didn't have COVID, if they were in a hospital, just because you couldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife talks about that same thing in her hospital where, well, it's the same situation where, like, you know, the parents or whatever, or a very limited number of people can be in the hospital.
Yeah.
So a lot of that conversation or whatever has to happen over FaceTime because we live in hell? ?
Yeah. Yeah.
So your dad died how long ago?
He died in 2014.
That experience was very different from this one. It sounds like you tried to do a lot of, like, ritualistically, it seems like you tried to replicate a lot of things to give your mom kind of the same experience that your dad had, but
yeah.
It must have been a totally different experience. He was home with you, right?
Yeah, he was home, and he had, you know, he'd had cancer for about, I can't remember now, I guess 9 months. So we kind of knew it was coming, you know, it's always still a shock, but you know, it seemed, you know, obviously it wasn't getting better and tumors were getting bigger and stuff like that. And then, my dad was conscious the entire time until right, you know, when he fell asleep after that, the night before he died, after we had spent all this time telling him everything that we loved about him, then he didn't wake up after that. He just started, you know, he just went to sleep and then went away. But, it was my first big loss, you know, I mean, and I'm so lucky to have, you know, been a middle-aged person before I experienced a really, really big loss. So you know, I feel like sometimes, like, I know a lot of comics, a lot of stand-ups talk about death, and I know so many young comics who already have a dead parent or two. And I'm like, it's unbelievable. You know, like So sometimes I'm like, wow, I got a little dramatic. Now when I look back, I'm like, you know, I had parents till I was, you know, in my late 40s. That's not bad. That's pretty good. But you know, when it's your dad and
you're allowed to be sad about it. It doesn't matter what other people.
You're no perspective at all.
Exactly.
You're like, that's for other people's dads. Mine is supposed to live forever. This is ridiculous, right?
Well, I think, I don't know if it's like this for you, but when my son died, it's a lot of like suddenly realizing how many other people have had something like this, like connecting the dots between yourself.
Yeah.
It took a while because right after he died, I was like, I'm the only person who's ever had this happen. Me and I don't want to speak for my wife, but sort of how we felt for a little while.
Right.
And then gradually as you come back to the planet Earth, someone is like, oh, you know what? I never told you about this, but this thing happened to me.
Wow.
You know, we had a miscarriage. And you're like, oh, wow. And then someone else tells you. And then someone else tells you. And you're like, oh, this happened to all these people. And then with parents, especially in comedy, like you said, there's so many people talking about it. But it's just like, it's something that kind of washes over you before you relate to it, maybe.
Yeah. You hear someone talking about it on stage, you're like, oh, that's a good joke.
Right. No, it's really. You're like,
I don't know what it means. And I'll never tell a joke like that because that's not going to happen to our family. Right.
That's totally true. It's like, that's a thing that doesn't, it resonates with me on on one level, but the second level for me to get it would take a legitimate tragedy for me to understand the full depth of this joke.
Yeah. And I don't want to have a tragedy, so I'm not going
to
have one.
It's not worth it to me. I'll just laugh a little less loudly than everyone else. That's fine. But that is like something that I think about a lot is how grief is something that we're all, I mean, if you live long enough, we're all going to be feeling this. And I think that for me, when it happened, it was very isolating. And I don't know how, I don't know how it was for you, but I do know that the way you handled it made it feel less isolating for a lot of people who have gone through it. You know what I mean? Because I think for a lot of people, we kind of keep it under wraps. That's like something you mentioned once and then never talk about again.
Right.
But you wrote a book.
Yeah. I wrote a book about my dad called Dead People Suck. And it's comedy about hospice and cancer and grief and all
it's
that.
So funny.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it's just really, really funny. I say that because also being exposed to a lot of art and comedy that's grief related.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is still great, but not as funny.
Oh, thank you.
This is a very, I mean, I think if you were to say to someone, I wrote a book about hospice, a comedy book about hospice and death, the people would be like, well, I'm for sure not going to read that. That sounds just not funny. It's very funny. Anyway.
Oh, thank you.
And you also did stand up about your dad as well.
Yeah, I did this because I was intending to live tweet when my dad died. I just didn't want to leave aside, and I just started coming up with all these jokes that I would have told on stage that night. So I just started tweeting jokes because I usually never before that, I don't think I ever tweeted jokes I thought I would use on my act. You know, I always like tweeted topical stuff, but I never, you know, tweeted like good jokes, you know, I didn't want to give that away for free.
Yeah. Twitter's just like a cesspool.
Yeah. But I had nothing else to do and I wasn't going to get on stage that night. So I started tweeting, you know, and then, you know, Twitter jokes are different from stand-up jokes. You know, they can be a little more subtle, I guess. So then people started paying attention to it. And then it kind of became its own thing, which was strange. But it was really cool because everyone knew about my dad, and people started praying for him. And to me, I'm like, okay, whatever. If that makes you feel better. But it does make, it did make my dad feel better because he's like super Catholic. And so I would show him, like, you know, early on when he was more conscious, I would just show him things people were saying that total strangers were saying on Twitter and Facebook, you know, and it was shockingly like all really sweet, you know, for my dad.
Yeah, that's priceless too, that kind of thing. I mean, tweeting about my son also is the only time I've ever been on Twitter and had the comments be nice. Like, the only thing I would ever be like, you should read the comments on this because they're so sweet.
Right.
Never before or since.
I know. What a price to pay for a nice Twitter experience. I mean,
yeah. Again, I would pass if I could. I would make that trade, but it was a weird thing to be like, "Oh, I guess there is some ability in social media to connect with people in a way that's not exclusively hateful."
Right. Yeah.
And it was also a good way to, and I don't know if you felt this way about your dad, but also, like, we had, you know, my son died about a month after he was born.
Oh my gosh.
So we had a lot of people who hadn't seen us for a while who'd be like, oh, hey, how are the twins? Whatever. And putting it on social media was a way to be like, just everybody tell everybody so I don't have to tell you face to face. And telling people face to face, the worst part wasn't me saying it. The worst part was how destroyed the other person was,
right,
when they'd be like, how are the twins? And I'd be like, oh, bro, this sucks for you. I'm so sorry that you asked that question, but one of them died. And then, like, oh my God, I ruined that guy's whole month. Like, he's not gonna be able to look at me.
Right.
So putting it out there, just like another benefit of Twitter or whatever, is being like, okay, everybody knows now. So I don't have to try not to mention it.
Yeah, and also puts you in the position of now you have to take care of this other person when you can barely take care of yourself, you know?
Completely.
Yeah.
And that is, like, especially because son dying is like a level of, it's like, you know, turns the universe upside down. There's definitely a level of it that's like, okay, this, the person I'm talking to, it's like, this might be the saddest sentence you have ever heard in your entire life. So you might not be ready for it. So, like, it is a lot of like, oh shit, now I gotta make you feel better. And it must be like that with your losing your parents. I mean, similar, at least in some ways.
A little. Well, like when I found out about your son, and then, you know, I was invited to do the podcast, I'm like, well, no, I mean, these are natural deaths. Even though they suck, they were in their 80s. It's totally okay.
Yes, sure,
like,
I can't even.
I don't know that I can, whatever. I feel like I'm on level one or something.
Hey, know? your level still counts. That's a big, they're all the levels are in, they're all in the game.
Right. I think that the thing about COVID was this weird thing we were all going through together, but kind of not, you know, you just hear about people that have COVID.
Yeah, totally.
And it sounded awful. But you know, you're staying safe. Everyone's staying safe. So for a long time, it really didn't affect anyone except for the inconvenience of being quarantined. And so I think for some people, I was the first person they knew who actually had had somebody that had COVID, and it was like, oh my God, this is real. And then at the time, at least, I don't remember that anyone was, if you heard of someone dying of COVID, it was afterwards, you know, and you didn't hear anything leading up to it really.
Right.
And so I think this might've been the first time of someone walking you through a COVID death. You know, they're all unique in a way. Some people, you know, last for a long time, and then some people, don't. So they're all different. You know, my mom's was a lot quicker than other people's, I think, because she was so frail. But it happened, and it happened during, you know, before another uptick and after the huge first explosion. So
yeah,
I think it was still new to a lot of people. Like now, I mean, you know, I read about them a lot, you know, because I'm very interested in them. I have like a separate COVID Twitter list that I check a lot of sites because I'm, you know, I guess I'm just interested as a person, but also because of my mom, and also because they're so unnecessary right now. Like, they, almost every single COVID death that happens right now could have been avoided. And my mom's couldn't have been. Like, it, that's what made, I'm like, I sometimes feel like, hey, I told you.
Yeah.
Like, I told you what it would be like. I gave you a week of updates. I told you, and you didn't fucking pay attention. And now you're dead. What?
Why?
You're 40 and you're a dad.
Yeah.
Why? I fucking told you.
What? I think it is, like you said, it's that sense of like people feeling like it's an inconvenience at the worst. It's like, I don't have it. It's something that other people have.
Yeah.
I think that's what also enables, I don't want to turn this into a podcast about politics.
I know.
But that's also what enables that whole feeling of like, well, I don't need to get vaccinated because I'm not getting it. And then the only way that person can learn that lesson probably is from getting it or from like
or a loved one. Yeah.
Yeah. Or a loved one, or like going. I was watching something today. ESPN's First Take. Because one of the hosts was talking about how he had, you know, he was hesitant to get vaccinated and he went through a ward. Somebody, I guess, had taken him into a COVID ward and he was like, oh, this is real.
Really?
And I think that a lot of people just don't have that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the average anti-vax or even, you know, vaccine hesitant person living in wherever a local doctor is not going to be like, we're going to do a tour through the hospital so you understand that this is a real thing. But I think a lot of people are just like, well, I don't believe in it. I don't think it's real.
Yeah, it's out of sight, out of mind, basically. If the person has COVID, they either stay in their house or they are whisked away to a hospital and you don't see them. I remember.
You can't see them even. Even if you wanted to see them, you can't see them.
Yeah, right. There was someone had snuck footage of the hospital in Houston where, this is like a year ago, people were just sitting in chairs, dying in chairs.
Yeah.
You know, like, so horrific. And I understand why, you know, you don't want to violate anyone's right to privacy, but, you know, maybe there should be just live feeds at hospitals, you know?
Yeah, so you can see.
If they figure out a way to blur people's faces and just.
I'm sure we could do it. I'm sure the CIA could figure that out. We get pixelate some people.
Yeah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I wanted to ask, just to go back one subject, we were talking about social media. Did you find that being as public as you were about your mom and dad's passing, did that help you? Like, did it feel, was it something that you were doing just like kind of because it was happening, because you are naturally someone who's on Twitter and also funny? Or did it have any kind of effect on you that felt like therapeutic or whatever?
I guess anytime I get a laugh is therapy. It's therapeutic. It feels good. I'm a comic, you know? So anytime you get a tweet with a lot of reactions, it feels good. So yeah, that's just a basic comic thing, I think.
Got it.
You know, when my dad was dying, what was really cool is people chimed in to tell me to do things that they remembered from their hospice situation. I think it was Brandy Posey that told me to get a picture of my hand holding my dad's hand. And someone else told me to get, if my dad could still speak, get him singing Happy Birthday to me, which I did.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that was really cool. Like, it wouldn't have occurred to me, because you're just like, you're in total, I got to keep this person alive and make sure that doesn't happen mode, right?
Right.
And then with my mom, of course, it was all these people helping to pressure the hospital to let us visit her. It was really amazing. And then, of course, you know, my friend Tammy, I'm kind of working on this as a bit in my act, but it's true. After my mom died, after my dad died, we called the, like, it was at home, it was the place I grew up. We called this mortuary that we'd, heard of for the, entire 40 years we'd lived there and never used, and called them, and they picked up my dad's body. It was all very, normal. And then down here, I don't have a mortuary. Right. I don't have one, And the hospital's like, what are we doing with your mom's body? And I'm like, I don't know. And you keep it. It's full of COVID. It's all yours. I don't know what to do. So my friend Tammy texted me and she goes, I know someone who just started a mortuary, and she takes Venmo. I went for it. And it's this woman named Lindsay Farrington. It's great. She did a great job. She got my mom's body, and I Venmo'd her $1,200, which was, that's not bad.
No, not bad at all.
It was way cheaper than my dad, who was, you would think inflation would have jacked it up. But she's a one-woman mortuary, and she did a great job. It was really funny. It was just so strange.
I mean, that's incredible. Yeah. Yeah, to Venmo someone to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it really feels, you said it's cheaper and she did a good job, but it still feels very dystopian.
Yes. And yeah, and then for the joke in my act is for the emojis, I just sent three fires to her when I paid her on Venmo. I don't know if I can't remember if I did that, but.
Do you think about grief a lot? Is it something that occupies your daily life, or once a week that you do you feel? How often does the memory of this stuff make you feel sad? Is it often? Is it ever? Is it?
It's like I miss my dad a lot, and especially when I hear about other people's 90-year-old parents.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, my dad should be 90. He would be 91 if he was alive right now. I'm like, it's not unreasonable. I'm not asking that he lived to be 135, but he could have swung 90.
Yeah.
So I get a little annoyed, I do miss them, and I miss being a daughter. I miss having one layer of protection from, being the top of the family, And
are you the older daughter? Are you older than your sister?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. 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 And, it's like, oh, now the holidays are up to us, and this was all heaped on my parents when their parents died. I don't know why it's like a huge inconvenience to me.
It's going to happen to it's going to happen to every generation for sure.
Yeah. But, so I resent that, I just like showing up to the house for Christmas. I don't like providing a Christmas, although, but, so I miss that, all of that. I miss our family. And I wish that my son and my nieces had these grandparents for a little while longer.
How old is your son?
He's almost 15,
Okay.
He had my dad till he was 7. So he didn't remember my dad too much, which really bums me out. So, and then, with my mom, it's a little ongoing because the paperwork, wrapping up the paperwork, because we're wrapping it up on her and my dad, like everything transferred over to my mom when they were married, she became the sole owner of things or the sole person. And then now it's all,
gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
Winding down it. Like I'm still doing her taxes from 2020.
Oh man.
I know. It's just all that stuff. And, transferring the car over, her old car. It's just a lot of paperwork kind of stuff.
Yeah. All the minutiae that you're like, we did a big thing and now we got to do all this little shit.
I know. And it's like, I'm like, oh, always things seem to keep popping up of like, oh no, you have to do this. You have to send this in. And then we haven't buried her yet. Like I still have her ashes, and we were waiting, obviously until like my mom has a few friends that are really old. So they got to be all vaccinated. And then my sister, we all had to be able to show up at this place in Northern California on the same day. So we're doing that at the end of the month, finally. And my mom, I don't know if I believe in spirits, but my son's father, has he senses my mom at the house when he visits. And then my mom's picture flew off the wall a couple times. And, you know.
Off the wall? Not just a drop, but like a to the side?
Popped.
Wow. That'll get you thinking about some stuff.
It feels like my mom's like, I want to be in the niche with Ron. That's my dad, right? Uh-huh. Like she, before any of this happened, she's like, mix my ashes in with dad's ashes, you know? So it feels like, I guess that's some sort of completion that needs to happen. And I guess I still have a lot of her clothes and things like that. Like I didn't throw anything away. I was like, I'm going to keep everything and then, you know, wait a year and then see what I still want to keep. You know, it's hard because I don't want to keep, I just don't want to have a lot of things. Going through, after my dad died, he had so much stuff. He had tens of thousands of books. And getting rid of all that stuff was agony. And I don't want to put my son through it. Like, I want to have gotten rid of most of my stuff.
Agony, just like the emotionally agony or agony, but also I'm sure just like the clerical level of like having to get everything actually
clerical.
Gone.
Yeah. And the emotional too. Yeah, for sure. Before my dad even got cancer, I got him to open up a bookstore in Amazon and we started selling his books, you know.
I thought you were gonna say you got him to just open a bookstore, and I was like, "That's a big move."
Sold about 900 books.
What?
Yeah, and
that's so many books.
It's crazy, and we listed so many more. He was an engineer, so he had a lot of really old out of print engineering books, which seems like there wouldn't be a huge market, but there is. You know, there's always some engineering nerd who wants something.
Sure.
So we did sell a lot. It was kind of that was fun for him, you know. But you know, a lot of the stuff that he'd been keeping for 50 to 70 years, not 70, I guess 60 years, because he was 80 when he died and he was 20 when he started really starting his collection, you know, that he insisted were super valuable were not valuable, you know. And so there's a lot of like these books unnecessarily took up 80% of a room in a small house for 45 years.
For no reason.
You thought that they would be valuable.
Yeah, that's like my comic book collection at my parents' house that's still there. That when I was a kid, I was like, no, Dad. Issue 10 of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is going to pay for my kids' college.
Are you right? I mean, have you checked that? Or
I have not checked. I am sure that I'm wrong. I am positive that was a waste of everyone's energy and money for sure.
Right, right. I mean, if they want to go to junior college, maybe, you know, you don't know.
That's right. If they want to go to a very small, if they want to go to like University of Phoenix online, we might be able to handle a portion of that.
That's good. You got it.
But yeah, my wife's parents are in town because my father-in-law's aunt she's quite old and has a lot of stuff. They're going through that same process now of like going through her home and finding all this stuff and being like, I don't know, what can we get rid of some of this stuff? What are we going to do with it? And my parents, who are the best and I love very much, have acquired so much shit in their house. Like it's like a, you know, a desk on top of a desk, literally. And you're like, what are we going to eventually have to do with this?
Yeah. And it's weird because some of it might be valuable or some of it is stuff like that you grew up with. It's white noise in your life, you know? Right. And then you realize, oh, I want, like my dad had this drafting table, gigantic drafting table that he just always had it. You know, I never thought about it. And it turns out it's like this old drafting table that this from Germany that has like, it's got like these iron joints that are super like coveted. And now I love it. I mean, I almost threw it away because I was like, I've seen this my whole life. And my parents lived in Iran. And so they had a lot of Iranian stuff that I.
Why did they live? Why did they live in Iran?
My dad was a spy. No, he was working during the, when the Shah was in power, my dad was working on it in an engineering company for an engineering company that was building a dam near Tehran, the Karaj
gotcha.
Dam.
Okay.
So, you know, and I, for some reason, just because it, maybe because all the Iranian, the rugs and all the plates and everything were in the living room that no one went in except for grownups. It was one of the, it was like, I don't like this furniture. I don't like the vibe of this room. I don't like any of it. Right.
Yeah.
And I hate it. And now I'm like, this stuff might be valuable. Maybe I should look into it. I don't know. There's weird. It's weird. Like some stuff you just, you got so used to as a kid, you just can't imagine that you'd want it. And now, now it's like the only thing to remind you of your parents, you know? So yeah. It's some stuff you keep and then some stuff you just, then it's so strange to all of a sudden love a piece of furniture that you never thought about just because your dad worked there at that piece of wood that you never cared for before he died.
Yeah. You talked about your mom's picture flying off the wall. Do you imagine your parents being someplace now? Like, do you think of them as, like, I don't know, in heaven or as spirits or anything like that?
Yeah. I think my sister said mourning doves always travel in pairs, right? And then, so there was a solo mourning dove that was hanging around as we were preparing to go to my dad's funeral. We're like, that's dad. but my mom was like, oh. And then as we were pulling away, the second mourning dove joined it. But my mom didn't see that. I didn't tell her. So she thought it was like, it was my dad a little bit. I mean, as much as you would think your husband turned into a bird.
Yeah, but I think,
you know,
like,
she maybe allowed us that or something.
I think stuff like that happens, especially when like tragedy hits where you're like, oh, all of a sudden like this, you're listening to a song on the radio and you're like, this is a sign from God, this song. And the song could be anything. You're just in the mood for that at this moment. So that you're like, oh, wow, I think that like Cardi B is actually rapping about my dad who died. And it's like, she's definitely not. It's 100% not about that.
My best friend, her mom passed away too. And she has been seeing a psychic to talk to her mom. Now, I don't know what to think about that. But she asked me to drive her to this guy's house because she was afraid it would be so overwhelming that she wouldn't be able to drive back. Right. So I drove my friend and I waited in the waiting room, and an hour goes by, and according to her and the psychic, while Cheryl was talking to her mom, my mom interrupted. He guessed my mom's name correctly, which was, Joanne. And said that she was worried about how I was grieving her death. And that she took up like 15 minutes of Cheryl's hour, which cost like $1,000 to talk to Cheryl and to tell her to tell me stuff. So I don't, you know,
So Cheryl was talking to the psychic and together they were talking to her mom.
Yes.
But that $1,000 session was interrupted by your mom who, I mean, I feel like that's, do you have to pay her $250 for her to tell you that information? That seems like,
I think so.
I didn't know psychics were that expensive.
This guy's really good, apparently.
I guess so.
See, I don't know how he would have known who I was because she didn't say, she just said, this is my friend Lori and she's going to wait. So that's the thing where I don't, unless he did a deep dive into who her friend was and found my tweets. But how, I just, that seems like a lot to expect from somebody.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm deeply skeptical of that kind of stuff. But I have a lot of friends whom I love and respect who are not, who are like really open to it and who,
right.
I know like there are times too when for sure I have thought, oh, someone's communicating with me from beyond, even though my logical brain is like, absolutely not, no way, you're being an idiot.
Right.
There's a part of you that's like, but this and this and this, I feel like I could make this into some kind of a connection to the beyond.
I mean, who knows what little we know? I would love it. I would love it if we get that, if we actually get to see the spirits of these people we long for so desperately, you know? I mean, don't we deserve it after going through all this hell on earth of being alive? Don't we, at the very least, deserve a reconciliation?
Yes, absolutely. But that's so true. We do deserve it. It's also just insane to be like, oh, well, you're around for X many years and then you're just gone and that's it forever. Where did you go? You just no longer exist in any place on Earth.
Yeah. Yes. And the thing about the, is it 28 grams of the how your body weight changes when you expire? And, you know, is that the weight of a soul?
I don't know what this is.
There's a movie. It's either 21 grams or 28 grams. It's some small, a very tiny amount, but it's a really depressing movie about a lot of people that die.
I love that. I love that shit. I love that.
I know, me too. Oh, more. But the premise is that your body is very, say 28 grams lighter, you know, after you die. So, you know, if you were alive 10 minutes later, you're dead, your body's just a little bit lighter. And what was that energy? Was that your spirit? And where does it go? Because it's got to go someplace. It doesn't.
This is a movie. This is like a documentary, or it's like a.
It's a movie. I forget. Gosh, a lot of really good people are in it. I forget.
I can't wait to watch this movie.
Not Gina Rowlands, but somebody like her is in it.
Okay.
But also that I think that's a true fact that your body gets a teeny bit lighter after you die. So that's the thing where I'm like, well, maybe that's true. I hope so.
Yeah, that's amazing. That,
Do you read a lot of afterlife account, you know, or people that have had near death experiences and all that kind of stuff? My mom got really into that after my dad died because she really needed to know that she would see him again.
I don't, but I have many friends who believe that they've had some kind of communication, and I think it's one of those things where, like, if you feel it and believe that it's happening, that's enough for it. That's a way in which it is true. It is true if you believe that it is, to that extent.
Right. And I also find that if you look at humanity, like our history, we've always had that yearning to communicate with people that have gone. We miss them and we long for them. Why would we have that? If you look at yin and yang, and why would we have that yearning if it couldn't be satisfied at some point? You know, like it seems like the fact that it exists means there, like that, it's a 2 + 2, and it means there is a 4 someplace. You know, we just don't we have the problem, but there is an answer for it. It just seems like we wouldn't have those feelings if there wasn't a way to resolve them.
That's a great question. I wish I had a better answer for you than, wow, that's deep, but that's the only.
I'll take it, man.
That's the only thing I can think of. Is there anything that you, now having gone through this, you mentioned that you had people who reached out to you when your father was in hospice care, mm-hmm. and I'm sure also when your mother was dying. Are there things that you would say, if you could go back and tell yourself, or that you would tell other people whose parents are sort of, you know, on their last days, is there advice that you would give them for how to deal with it?
So if you both your parents are alive, here's what I would suggest. I would suggest having a family dinner, you know, and I would suggest taking your iPhone and putting a napkin over it and recording the dinner with no one knowing that you're doing it. And that way you're going to get that unique dynamic between your parents. That's, you know, not them being self-conscious or anything. And you'll be able to listen to that. Because you're going to forget. And one's going to die and the other parent is going to be a shell of their self, you know, in most cases. And they'll never be the same again. And they might never have that snap that they used to have when the other parent was alive. And so I do have some recordings. I wish I had more of my mom and dad just teasing each other. And I love it. I love it.
You had those. Why did you have those? You had those just in the anticipation that at some point they would eventually not be alive, or
my dad was maybe talking about his my dad was in Korea, and so maybe he was talking about the Korean War, and my mom was listening, you know, and I just recorded it because you know, he hardly ever talked about it. So I think I just hit record or something.
Oh, wow.
But then during hospice, I was dating a guy who was a director. And at the time we were like really close and I'm like, oh, what if I marry this guy? So I had him come up to the house with me to meet my dad just in case. And again, I had no idea. Even though I was told my dad was dying, I was like, okay. Like I didn't realize I was forcing my dad to meet somebody in the last right. 4 days of his life, right? Maybe that's not the time to bring new people in, but whatever. I was in denial. And but he had a sense of things were happening, and he left the camera on a couple times without telling us. And there's like this one little like 30 seconds where my sister and I are teasing my mom and making fun of her. And she says to my dad, oh, don't leave me. They're so mean to me. And it got a big laugh and my dad was laughing. And that was like that, a version of that conversation happened 10 million times in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Of me and my sister making fun of my mom and her going to my dad to, you know, for mock help. And we got one on tape and I love it. You know, just like it can take me back to being part of that pod, our family pod, so quickly.
That's such great advice. I think about that all the time, about just like people that are in my life. And I'm, as I get older, my parents and like, you know, family members who've been around, and how like someone very close to me, I'm half Filipino, moved back to the Philippines. And I don't know that I'll ever see that person again. Mm-hmm. And it is like, shit, man, like my kids met her when they were really little, but are they going to they'll have no idea who that is. So that's also something not just for you to have, but also for you to force your son to watch over and over again. They'd be like, this is who your grandparents were.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, but it's not true because you're a comic. So you probably have a ton of videotape of yourself. But after my dad died, there was this micro cassette tape in a Radio Shack micro cassette recorder. And I was like, what's this? So I press play. And it's my dad from like the 80s. So he's like 50 and his voice sounds so young. And he didn't, you know, we weren't a big camcorder family and stuff. So we don't have a ton of early stuff on footage, you know, tape or whatever. And he was sad because he was my dad's brother had given him money as a gift. And my dad, I didn't realize how bad off they were financially. Like he was like the type that would never tell you, but apparently my uncle saved us from, you know, having to, you know, leave the house, sell the house or whatever. And so he had left like a thank you message for my uncle, which is weird. But anyway, it was so strange to hear my dad's voice sound so young, and you know, you just get used to it. It gets older and older and older. I'm sure if you let old stand-up tapes like I do, my voice is like 20 octaves higher.
Yeah.
You know, and so yeah, I don't know, that's also a cool thing.
And also with parents, audio isn't something that you like. I have pictures of my parents when my parents are both still alive, but I have pictures of them when they're young.
Yeah.
And even those I'm like, who is, wait, this is you guys?
I know.
But the sound is like I never, that's a sense that I don't know what they sounded like. I'm sure my dad has like, you know, camcorder stuff from when I was a kid that they're talking on.
Yeah.
But I bet that would be shocking to me to hear their voices.
Sure. And also get them, if you have like old pictures of like, you know, lots of ancestors, you know, get someone to identify those people. There's some old person in your life was like 4 years old and that's your great, great grandma sister, something like that. You know what I mean? And so if you have photos like that where you've got relatives or you don't know who they are, I bet one old person knows and forgot that they knew, but they really are. It's like, you know, a library burns down, but they really do all know all this foundational stuff about your family is so important, you know?
Yeah. Okay, I've taken up an hour of your time, Lori. This has been amazing. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I really, really had I appreciate the conversation for sure.
I did too. Maybe weird to say that I'm a big fan of yours, but this was a real pleasure getting to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm a fan of yours as well. And, you know, as you are sorry for my loss, I'm very sorry for your loss as well. I'm a mom, so.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is A Good Cry with Lori Kilmartin. Thanks for listening, and I hope it helps. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.